This is Susan Gingrich, the herb lady from Ohio, and we have Thomas Easley on with us this evening as well. He's getting himself situated before we can begin. This evening we're going to be talking about herbs again, and tonight we wanted to focus on a different system of the body. We've talked about the digestive tract and the intestinal system and all the things that can go wrong there. We've done a call on the circulatory system, I think. Anyway, tonight we're going to focus on the kidneys. And this is a system that is underestimated, in my opinion. The kidneys, the urinary tract, is a very, very important system. When it goes down, you got some serious problems. We had a doctor friend who, in one of those quick 6-minute visits with her, she said that they were well aware when the NSAID family of painkillers were brought across the counter that they would cause problems for the kidneys. And they weren't sure how serious, but she claimed at that point that probably 75% of the dialysis going on in this country are because of those painkillers. So really, the kidneys are very sensitive, and they're sensitive to the harder drugs that we're using. Thomas, are you there yet? Not quite. Okay. He asked me to go ahead and get started, and then he would join us. I am particularly concerned. Over the last few years, we've all heard about the highway robberies concerning kidneys, where people wake up in a bathtub with ice around them, and they've had a kidney robbed. This is particularly a problem in Mexico and into South America, especially if you're a traveling tourist. One of the things I noticed when we were in China was there was a renal hospital with a great big sign. You could see it from the highway. And I have watched a 60 Minutes program where they were talking about how many Americans go to China for kidney transplants. And it's become such a problem to us. I think about this every once in a while, and I think, what is it about us that we think we can go just run to another country and get black market spare parts for us? Isn't it time we started really taking a closer look at what it would take to prevent a problem in that part of our system and take care of ourselves? We had a gentleman come see us about 3 years ago in December, as I recall it. Now, he had been to see me a year before, and I had recommended some things to him that he just plain didn't like. He wouldn't do it. So a year later, he was back, and at that point, he told me that he was 2 weeks away from dialysis. He had congestive heart failure by then, and he also had diabetes. And he really didn't want to hear anything about allergies to foods or painkillers that could hurt him or any of those things. He was in pain, and he would, you know, that was natural. That's what you do in America, is you take a painkiller. So I had to sit down with him. We talked for 2 or 3 hours that first time just to get the crowbar in. And then he came back the next day, and he was trying to bargain for certain foods. It was really fun. And I said, look, you just proved me wrong before you decide that I'm wrong. Just prove it to me. Make the changes that I'm suggesting. And then if you don't feel a billion times better, then I'm wrong. But don't tell me I'm wrong till you've tried it. And meanwhile, his wife was telling me that the doctor had told her he had maybe 2 months at the outset to live in the condition he was in. Okay, so we took on the fact that he had congestive heart failure. He had he was on Lasix. He was swelling up with water retention. And the diabetes was making him crazy. Of course, there were blood pressure medicines. In his case, he was regularly taking 34 drugs, no less than that. And the drugs themselves, that many drugs will wreck your liver, just completely take you out. So, and his kidneys were already nearly gone. So what we did was, first of all, you've got to keep the heart beating or you're dead, right? So we did some things for his heart, which we've talked about before. That would be CoQ10, magnesium. And with congestive heart failure, what happens is the kidney is becoming so damaged that you begin to swell up. you hold water until you fill up in your legs and right on up into the trunk of your body, and eventually the lungs begin to fill. And when the lungs fill up, you drown. So you're fighting two battles. First of all, how to keep the heart beating, and then how to keep you from drowning, basically. So we have to heal the kidneys and drain the water, or drain the swamp, if we could be so bold, at the same time. Part of the reason I was thinking about doing this topic tonight is that I have a client that I met for the first time this week who is so loaded with water that her legs are, they look like peck baskets in the orchard, you know, the huge, big, let me see, how big around that be? If you set her down inside of a great big pot that you'd cook your spaghetti in, those legs were big, as big around as that. Bigger than my, you know, my hands making a circle, much bigger than that. And she wasn't sure she was going to listen to me, of course, but her daughter had dragged me there. So we stuck working on her. Okay, so the first thing we need to do is recognize the water situation. Thomas, are you there yet?
Yes, I'm here.
Good, good. How long have you been here?
Just a little while? A second. Just logged in. Okay, so you're talking about water retention.
We're talking about water retention, and we're talking about how often the kidney problem goes right along with the circulatory problem. And in congestive heart failure, you're working with not only a sloppy heart or a great big oversized heart that I like to compare it to the balloon you find behind the couch after the party, you know, just kind of overstretched. And untoned, okay? So you got a heart like that and a kidney that is not functioning, and your body starts to fill up with water. Now, this is the ultimate in congestive heart failure. Eventually, you drown in that fluid that is just throughout the whole body. So I was saying that we first have to drain the swamp, support the kidneys, and keep the heart beating, and then we can go look at whatever else is going on. Okay,
right.
So you want to say anything?
I think a common misconception with water retention is that you're drinking too much water. I get that all the time. In fact, my grandmother's on dialysis, and I've had a talk with her doctor, and, you know, he said, well, if she's retaining water, just have her drink less. And I thought, how ludicrous is that? Because the body holds on to what it does not get enough of. And so a lot of water retention is actually caused by dehydration.
Yeah, and water is the universal solvent. It's the cleaner for the body. So you need to keep putting water through, and that will help the body to do the dumping, the cleansing, and let it go. Now, part of that water retention is that there's so much inflammation in the body that cells will break, and then the fluids from the inside of the cell dump out into the interstitial fluid, and that's when you have all that swelling that's occurring. Part of that is a potassium imbalance with the sodium in your system. So that's why they keep telling you not to eat salt when you have blood pressure or water retention, because the sodium will put pressure against the cell wall from the interstitial fluid, and the potassium, if you don't have enough inside the cell, can't squeeze back at the same pressure, so the cell breaks, and then you have all that fluid. Have you ever noticed that if you eat a bowl of popcorn at the movies, the next morning your rings don't fit because your fingers are swollen? That's the same thing that's going on. So one of the things we need to do is get the potassium and sodium in balance. That'll help to reduce that kind of swelling and inflammation that way.
Yeah. But then another thing I get is that sodium is bad for you. That's just not correct. Your average blood pressure is not affected by sodium intake. It's the imbalance of sodium to potassium, and you find potassium in green leafy vegetables. So if people will eat green leafy vegetables, I don't think they should have to worry about sodium intake.
Yeah, and you know, there's a wonderful simple herb that most people leave on the side of their plate and consider it a decoration to be discarded. That's good old friendly parsley. It's high in potassium. So that's a great way to finish off your meal. It gets the potassium in that you need to keep from having any water retention from that. Oh, there's another herb, by the way, that I have learned will help to take swelling down if you get yourself in serious trouble and, you know, you're swelled up all over, and that's sage. Just plain sage tea will bring down that kind of swelling. I heard someone once I'm talking about going to the fair and your ankles will swell up when you walk around all day on concrete. Safflower will help to prevent that. That's another herb that's probably high in potassium.
Right.
Now, but let's go talk about the kidney itself and its relationship within the body. One of the things I wanted to say here is that the kidney in Chinese medicine is considered part of the structural system. Isn't that odd? It's a soft tissue that is so integral to bone density and to brittleness and to joint pain, especially from the waist down, that they consider that a part of the structural system. You want to elaborate on that a little bit, Thomas?
Well, they consider it a part of the structural system because it regulates minerals in the body. And for instance, if your body is over acidic and your kidneys can't flush out all of the acids, it starts using magnesium to counteract that acidity, which means you can't absorb your calcium, and it starts pulling calcium and magnesium from first the muscles, then the joints, and the bones. And you wind up with low bone density and aches and pains and arthritis and stuff like that, all because the kidneys aren't flushing the acids properly. And that's normally a lack of water. So the kidneys are really important with the entire structural system. A prime indicator of traditional kidney qi weakness in Chinese medicine is weak ankles and knees, low back pains, and weak eyes. The kidneys actually have a large influence over your vision. So by correcting somebody's kidneys, you can actually increase their eyesight. When I was growing up, before I got into herbs, I used to drink 10 to 12 Coca-Colas a day. And my kidneys were just shot, and my eyesight was like 2600. I mean, I was legally blind. And all I did was switch from colas to water, and within 3 years, my eyesight was down to 2100, not by taking any herbs for the eyes, but just by getting enough water to flush the kidneys properly.
And, of course, the pop has a lot of bad effects. One, it's loaded with sugar, which removes calcium from your system. And two, it's the fizzy part is phosphorus, and that pulls calcium out of you as well. So the biggest issue with the pop is how detrimental it is to your calcium intake. And up to the age of 30, you're supposed to be putting calcium into your bank account or your bones. After a certain age, you take out more than you put in, and it's harder and harder to get it in. So when kids spend a lot of their lives drinking pop instead of water, what we're seeing is a structural system that's going to fall apart before they mean to, you know, like early in their life. So that's one of the biggest dangers of drinking that kind of thing. I heard Dr. Meese one time say that when you have a young lady who has menstrual cramps, take the pop away. That's usually the biggest issue right there. It's because it's stripping you of calcium, and calcium is a natural pain reliever and cramp reliever. Just a little aside there. Okay. So back to kidneys.
Okay.
When you have lower back pain, that's one of the indicators that you're having a kidney problem. Any of you out there who go to the chiropractor frequently and he keeps resetting your hip bones, I know I've had that problem for years. I was told that I have one leg longer than the other. But since I've been paying more attention to my kidneys and actually, drinking the water, taking some herbal products that help to support it, and I'll admit I found a very good chiropractor, but it doesn't go out every week anymore. It takes a month for it to go out. And my gait is much more even. I used to kind of limp because the pelvis would just change position kind of on its own because of the situation in the kidneys. Okay?
Yeah, and we have a great formula that works on not as a diuretic like parsley or juniper berries or sumac berries or anything like that, but to actually build the kidney tissue up. We have a great formula called KVC. And so many times I see people that have either, looked in herb books or went to an herbalist and they have kidney problems and they're automatically put on a natural diuretic. We have one called Kidney Activator that is a natural diuretic. And I mentioned the parsley and juniper berries and sumac berries and things like that. Those are all astringents that flush the kidneys. But a lot of the times, the kidneys don't need that extra stimulation. A lot of times, they need building, not cleansing. And a lot of people mistake that, but the KVC is an amazing building formula. I use KVC for congestive heart failure by itself. When natural diuretics wouldn't work, when the kidneys were so strained, they just didn't have the energy to expel the fluid anymore, I just built the kidneys up with large doses of KVC, like 2 capsules every hour, and I was able to stave off the congestive heart failure just by building the kidneys up and letting them regain their function naturally.
It's something that happens with a heart failure situation. My husband had congestive heart failure, and he was offered a heart transplant. I've talked about this before. We managed to legitimately refuse it and rebuilt his heart and so forth. While he was still going through the problems, however, when his heart would suddenly start to race, and it would sometimes go up to 200 beats per minute, and when it would get like that, he would be running back and forth to the bathroom a lot. So when the heart takes off and goes at a faster pace, you will see a more frequent urination situation going on. So they are directly tied to one another in that respect.
Yes.
There's another disease that I've dealt with a few times. It's called amyloidosis, which is a hardening or a leathering of the kidneys or the heart. And I've had 2 clients with this. And I checked with the doctor one time, and he said, well, I said, do you send him to the cardiologist eventually or to the urinary guy? And he said, it depends on the person. One or the other of those organs will start to leather up with that. And in those cases, what you need to do is work with the structure of the organ, both of those organs. There's a product called Hair, Skin, and Nails, or HSNW, that has horsetail in it. And that became one of my favorites with these two people. Because of the silica in it, it helped to repair the nephrons in the kidney. And that is excellent for repairing lung cells as well. So, and I'm not talking about hairs of a horse's tail. This is an herb that's very much like asparagus. It's a bright green. It's starting to come up this time of year in Ohio and grows along the, like the elbows of the streams. And it's just loaded with silica, which is an organic version of sand. That's the inorganic version of silica. So it gives strength to the organs that it's feeding. It also, you know, makes your fingernails very strong and your hair thicker. So silica is something that I found is very helpful for repairing kidney.
I was just going to go into other kidney diseases. Want to talk about?
Yeah, I was heading the same direction. My brother, when he was 3 years old, was diagnosed with nephritis, which itis means heat, and neph means, you know, the kidneys. And his little belly was all swelled up. He was only a year younger than I was. So at 3 years old, I was only 4, and I just remember this going on around me. I do recall that he was sent to Children's Hospital, and his doctor sent him home after 2 weeks there. And Mom was having a particularly difficult time with this, and I found out later that he had told her that he would be dead in 2 weeks. There was nothing that modern medicine could do for him. This was in 1955, 4 or 5. He saw a chiropractor, took care of the nerves that connected to the kidneys. And so, especially with kidneys, I do recommend that people see a chiropractor and make sure that the nerves are correctly uncluttered there, you know, if it's a serious kidney situation. But that was our experience. And he's 55 years old now. He did fine with that. He had a lot of trouble with bedwetting, though. Every time his hip would go out, if he injured himself or something, he'd need to go back and have that nerve, you know, take the pressure taken off the nerve, and he would stop bedwetting again. Now, bedwetting, that's interesting. Children who bedwet, I have to a person managed to help them stop by stopping cow's milk. It's a simple thing. You get into that one?
What now?
Thomas, are you still there? Have you run into bedwetting being related to cow's milk intake?
You know, I actually have not worked on many cases of bedwetting. I just haven't ran into that very much.
Well, I've noticed that one of the things I've kind of put allergies to cow's milk in the kidney realm in terms of the fact that when you're puffiness and dark circles under your eyes, that's a kidney problem. But almost always when I see dark circles under the eyes, it's a dairy allergy. So they go together. I can give myself a black eye just by drinking a glass of milk. And I'll have black circles under my eyes for 3 days. And that is something that in both Chinese medicine and in other books, under the eyes, it's where you'll see what's going on with the kidneys. Go ahead.
Okay, so other kidney diseases, really more in the circulatory realm, but they're so closely related. Renal artery stenosis is a narrowing of the artery that runs into the kidney, and it's a lack of blood flow to the kidneys because of that. We relate it in the six tissue state models that we use by Matthew Wood to being a constrictive tissue state. And so a couple of herbs that help out with those constrictive tissue states. And constrictive tissue states in the kidneys are hard to identify. Basically, when nothing else works, you can assume it's a constrictive tissue state. I've worked with a number of people that have had just really weird symptoms. A guy, for instance, that urinated a little bit of blood every day for like 10 years, and the doctors could never figure it out. There was no infection, you know, nothing was wrong. Turns out that all of the tissue surrounding the kidneys was constricted and squeezing against the tissue, against the kidneys, and literally bruising it. And so a really great herb for that also works well for the kidneys is called agrimony. And a fresh tincture of agrimony cleared him up in 2 days. And with that works really well with renal artery stenosis as well as hawthorn berries. Hawthorn berries, when you're talking about arteries, hawthorn berries really are, it's the way to go. Hawthorn berries relax the arteries as well as they contain a special type of oil that lubricates the arteries and makes them more flexible so they bend instead of break. And that's really important when you're talking about renal artery stenosis.
Now, I haven't run into that one much. That's interesting. I'm fascinated with that. Okay, you know, there is a connection, too, between the kidneys and how well they function and blood pressure in some cases. Now, I heard Stephen Horn one time say that blood pressure can come from 9 different sources in the body, so you really have to take the person, their lifestyle, into consideration when you're dealing with blood pressure, which I consider a symptom and not a problem. Okay, but in some cases, you can go back to the kidney, and you can find that the kidney is under-functioning, and that can cause the blood pressure. In that, the kidney, part of the kidney's job is to clean the blood. And if it doesn't do that, you have a crud in the blood, and that can increase the blood pressure. So by improving the ability of the kidneys to function, then you can sometimes take that symptom out of the way, and you don't have to worry about that drug. One of the things I want to mention here is that, you know, if we're applying a medical model to the herbal use, people are thinking, well, how would I know if my kidneys are bad enough to want to use herbs with them? Don't I have to have symptoms of a disease and have it named before I would do anything to cure it? But with herbs, please understand that all we're doing anyway is supporting organ or system. And you can support a system that's very diseased or ill at ease, or you could support a system that you just want to improve a little bit. So every once in a while, I kind of go around and do a tonic herb program for one system in my body. And you can do that for the whole urinary tract by using a product that Nature Sunshine has called Urinary Maintenance. And it just kind of gives good baths to the whole bladder kidney situation and lets the whole system become better. So if you have a situation like, say, an older woman with incontinence, yeah, it'll help her too, but it would also help you to have a little bit more tone in that whole system, clean it out, and so forth. Now, kidney stones. Had a gentleman sitting there yesterday with kidney stones. We have discovered a wonderful way to prevent kidney stones, and it was a friend of mine who had been creating and passing kidney stones on a monthly basis. And I found it out by having a conversation with him one day. He turned slightly pale, swallowed hard, and I said, "Are you okay, Randy?" And he said, "I think I just passed a kidney stone." I said, "Oh, no, I think it would hurt a lot more than that." And he said, "No, I do this once a month. And remember, I'm a black belt in karate, and I take pain well." So he was literally producing and passing a kidney stone every month. And I've had people come in to see me who have created kidney stones more than once, and they're really afraid of them because apparently the pain is really horrendous. So his wife is actually the person who found this, but she was looking in the Journal of the American Medical Association and found an article which said to use 400 milligrams of magnesium every day and a B6 tablet, and that would prevent any kidney stones. So we tried it, and he has not produced another kidney stone since, and he was doing it on a monthly basis. Now, my theory on that is that the magnesium holds the calcium in suspension, and the B6 moves water quickly, so it's sort of like a fast-moving, swollen stream, so you're not going to drop out as many rocks out of a stream bed when it's moving fast and it's full like that. Interestingly enough, you can use the same combination for carpal tunnel syndrome, which seems to have a relationship to water retention as well. When you're puffy and swollen, you'll put pressure on the nerve in that wrist that has to go through a tiny little hole. And then with repetitive motion, it wears on it. So I think maybe the carpal tunnel situation is also a kidney or water retention problem.
I definitely agree with that. I think that carpal tunnel is just like bone spurs or kidney stones. It's when your calcium starts falling out of solution and it starts layering in the joint where the tendons are too tight for repetitive movement. And it basically is like a callus on the bone. And the magnesium is a wonderful preventative for that. I've also found with kidney stones, I love the urinary system because I've got to experiment so much with my mom. She had horrible kidneys when we started the whole herbal thing 10 years ago. In fact, she had E. coli in her kidneys and went through 57 bags of IV antibiotics for that. And she was averaging a kidney infection once every other month for about 15 years of her life. And so the kidneys I'm intimately familiar with, and she's had a number of kidney stones. About a year ago now, she called me, and she's not had any kidney problems in like 9 years. But she'd not been taking her kidney stuff, and she called, and she was in excruciating pain. She was running fever, and she said, "You know, I don't know what's going on. It happened that I was in the area. I stopped by, and I did a little bit of pulse testing, and I looked at her tongue and, you know, asked some questions, and I determined that it was a kidney stone." Well, I went ahead and put her on my normal program for dissolving kidney stones, and we decided to take her to the hospital because there was no telling how big that stone was. And, you know, if it's too big and you start dissolving it, it can still get lodged. So we went to the hospital, and the admitting nurse, the nurse practitioner there, looked at her and asked her some questions, and since she was running a fever, said, "Well, she's just got a kidney infection." And I said, "You know, no, I'm sorry, I think it's a kidney stone." And so he and I went back and forth for a few minutes, and he finally said, "I'll bet anything that it's a kidney infection." And so I responded with, "Well, it just so happens that I'm a gambling person. What would you care to bet? It's a kidney stone, it's not an infection."
Did you win?
And we wound up, he said that it would be inappropriate to bet money at the hospital, but we wound up betting 5 push-ups in front of the staff. And he went ahead and let her do an ultrasound, and he walked in about 30 minutes later with all of his nurses following him, and he dropped down in the middle of the emergency room and gave me 5 push-ups in payment. We actually watched on ultrasound over the next hour and a half as the kidney stone dissolved. And what I had her doing was extremely high doses of hydrangea, which is a wonderful kidney herb, and it dissolves kidney stones. So I had her take 2 capsules.
Did it that fast?
I had her taking two capsules every 10 minutes.
Wow.
And,
okay.
And I had her drink a half a gallon of strong lemon water. And the lemon water helps, has an astringent quality that helps tone the kidneys and keep the kidney tissue from tearing as stones pass. So we literally watched on ultrasound as the stone was dissolved over an hour and a half period. And it was a 5-millimeter stone, which is nothing to sneeze about. I mean, that's no fun
that's
at all.
That's big.
Yeah, so
ooh,
hydrangea is totally safe. And, I normally recommend 9 to 12 capsules a day for maintenance. Or for if you have multiple stones, you're trying to dissolve them slowly. But for acute situations, two capsules every 10 minutes with a half a gallon of strong lemon water, like six lemons to a half a gallon of water, works excellent.
That's a great idea. I like that. This is what I like about Thomas. He's so creative with this stuff. Just think about it. If you're in an emergency, do more, do it fast. And lemon is a great one for breaking up fat deposits, too, in the liver at the same time. Just lemon oil just does that. And it'll clean. We like to put lemon in our cleaning products. Another one that you might consider, I wonder if you'd use cider vinegar in a case like that. Think about
possibly.
It.
Possibly. Okay. I've not used that, but I might try that.
We've used hydrangea for years, too, with people who know they have stones. The hydrangea just softens them right up. We had one woman come to us, and she had been told to do the lithotripy, is that right?
Yeah.
So they break it up with a laser. And I had heard that you can use that, and it tends to maybe break it up into little sharp pieces. And sometimes it's even more uncomfortable once they've done that. And she decided to go ahead and do what the doctor wanted her to do instead of this $12 bottle of hydrangea or whatever it is. And everybody has a right, that's fine. And about midnight that night, her husband came by, and he needed the bottle because it was now worse once it was broken up. So she still used the hydrangea after that. And it's not going to hurt a thing, folks. Just you want to put soft edges on that thing when it passes through. And gentlemen, you have a longer distance for it to go than a woman does, so it's much more painful for you. So, I really highly recommend that you consider the hydrangea. It wouldn't hurt a thing. It just really doesn't.
No.
So I heard of one woman who gave it to her husband for 5 months running, and then one morning he passed this huge stone. So, you could do it slowly, too, and eventually it softens up enough to come on out without any discomfort at all. So go ahead.
Okay. So on the occasion that hydrangea does not work, another herb that most people don't think about as being related to the kidneys but works really well on kidney stones is burdock. Burdock root is wonderful for kidney stones.
I never would have thought of it.
On the rare occasion that somebody does not react well to hydrangea, I find about one out of every 200 people can't tolerate high doses of hydrangea and causes headaches and stuff like that. Burdock works really well. It also works on bone spurs and carpal tunnel, just like hydrangea works on bone spurs and carpal tunnel. And the last herb that I use for kidney stones, bone spurs, and carpal tunnel is Solomon's seal. Solomon's seal has got a slight kidney effect to it.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hello? I don't know whether Thomas is there or I'm not.
Okay, sorry about that.
Did you? Okay, yes. I didn't know whether it was you or me that was gone. Okay, we're both driving,
yeah, that
right?
Was me. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I was behind a mountain, so folks, I'm sorry there was a silence there. Okay, go ahead, Thomas.
Okay, yeah, so Solomon still also has an effect on the calcium in the body. It brings calcium back into solution, which is rare. Magnesium keeps it in solution, but hydrangea, burdock, and Solomon still bring the calcium back in solution, so they slowly help get rid of kidney stones, bone spurs, carpal tunnel. Occasionally gallstones are related to that. They're very handy to have around.
I want to say something else about bone spurs because I've seen them on necks, and that can be very painful. I had a lady come to me with one on the back of her heel, which is a common location for it. And they're always told by their doctor to not take any calcium when they have a bone spur, because they've clearly, according to the doctor, placed a calcium deposit on the bone, and therefore they're too high in calcium and need to reduce their calcium intake. That's what they're told. I've been told that too with calcified tumors, that they need to not take calcium under any circumstances. So they question me on that. But the way I've got it figured is that when you don't have enough calcium in the bloodstream to deal with an over-acid condition because of what you ate, then your body will go get calcium to kind of put out that acid fire, and it gets it out of your bones. Now, if you look at a cave ceiling, you'll see stalactites and stalagmites. The mineral is coming out of the stone, dripping. I think that the spur is probably created in the process of removing calcium from the bones. At any rate, we have added 4 to 5 calcium tablets a day to a person's diet, and then extra magnesium on top of that, and within 2 months, the bone spur is gone. So.
Yes. Wonderful.
It kind of puts the doctor to, and you got to understand this too about the kidneys. The kidneys regulate that removal of calcium from the bones. Their job, one of their jobs, is to regulate pH in the body, and you do that by bringing out calcium from the bone bank to regulate an over-acid condition. And we have a tendency in this country to eat over-acid producing foods on a regular basis, so we are constantly using up calcium in our system. And no wonder we have so many breaks and hip fractures and so forth as we get older. We've used it up. Okay, I'd like to go to kidney infections. You mentioned that with your mother, too?
Yes.
One of the common herbal uses, or one of the ones that everybody seems to know about, is cranberry juice for kidney infections. And I'd just like to say that cranberries are great if it's a bacterial infection. It works like Teflon to keep that bacteria from attaching to the wall of either the kidney or the bladder. But if it's not bacterial, cranberries aren't going to help. And if it's not bacterial, it's probably more likely to be yeast. And the high fructose corn syrup in cranberry juice is going to feed the yeast. So if you've tried cranberry juice for your kidney infection and it didn't work, it's probably because you actually have a yeast infection instead of a bacterial infection. Okay, now you tell us what you did for your mom on that. And she was probably doing antibiotic after antibiotic, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was doing antibiotic after antibiotic. She had horrible yeast infections, and so it was yeast with her fight. You know, caprylic acid, oregano, things like that were able to knock that yeast down, garlic, golden seal, all of those, and just taking the normal kidney formulas. But more importantly, changing the diet, getting rid of the pop, and, you know, cutting back on the high-phosphorus meats like beef, and cutting back on the food additives, and she was able to totally get her kidneys back in line. Another thing that, since we're talking about infections, I want to mention that so many people overlook is most bacterial kidney infections come from the bladder, and most bladder infections come from people not urinating after sexual intercourse. So many people don't know the little simple facts like that. And especially, girls in the age range from 18 to 25, nobody ever sat them down and told them that. And just by changing a habit here and there, they were able to eliminate urinary tract infections and kidney infections.
Well, that's a simple thing to do. It reminds me of the toilets that rinse you. You know, in other countries, they have these toilets that will rinse you. And that makes good sense, you know, rather than going around dry all the time and dealing with it. Okay, so if you've taken antibiotic after antibiotic for the kidney infection, then you probably have a yeast infection. Now, one of the things that I've done for that is colloidal silver to kill off the yeast. And then you want to repopulate the bowel with good bacteria. And the whole issue is actually in the bowel. And once you get that balance, then the kidney infection goes away. And I can't tell you how many older women have gone for years, one antibiotic after another. The antibiotic will take the symptoms away temporarily simply because the body is fighting with the antibiotic. And so the symptoms go away. But as soon as that antibiotic is gone and all of the good bacteria is killed off, the yeast just comes out and roars. And how is it, Frank Nisi put it one time, he said, giving an antibiotic for a yeast infection is like pouring gasoline on a fire. I mean, you're literally going to make it rage worse, out of control, by doing that. So you don't want to use antibiotics on a yeast infection. You'll create more yeast infection. Okay, now what about bladder infections? Do you run into that much?
Yeah, bladder infections, you know, the same stuff that works for kidney infections, your garlic, your cranberry juice, unsweetened cranberry juice, not the stuff you buy at Walmart. collateral silver, golden seal, all of these are good for any type of infection in the body. And I think the golden seal especially works well for the bladder. I really like the toning qualities that it has as well, because it's an astringent.
Women have hysterectomies and their bladder will drop because there's nothing to hold it up anymore. I heard Irene talking about using corn silk one time as a way to sort of tighten and tone that cradle and actually bring a bladder back up. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, Uva Ursi works well for that also. In fact, there's an old Thompsonian formula that John Christopher popularized that's white oak bark and Uva Ursi and corn silk. And one more astringent. I'm trying to think of what it was. Probably bayberry, knowing Samuel Thomas, and he put bayberry in everything. But anyways, they both drank the tea internally and used it as a douche, and did that with some slantboard exercises, and you're able to take prolapsed uterus and bladders back in a position.
Isn't it neat to think that you can actually turn some of these things around that we take for granted are downhill from the minute they're diagnosed? Okay, how about men and urinary flow? As they get older, they're all taking FloMax, right? Now we're getting into the prostate condition or the relationship of that to urinary flow. But if you let the prostate swell around that urinary flow, you're going to back things up and really make a mess in there. So you want to talk about that?
Sure. You know, talking about the prostate is an uncomfortable subject for many people, and, you know, I work with a lot of older men here in the South that just don't like to hear it. But if you're from the age 40 to 55, you need to have ejaculation twice a week. Above 55, once a week is okay, but you've got to keep the prostate clean so to keep the swelling down. It's like a sinus infection. It's never going to go away unless you, you know, blow the infected mucus out. Okay.
Hello.
So
you're talking. Is this
your
lady?
Cleaning your pipes, huh?
Yeah.
Yes, like cleaning the pipes out.
Great. I have a question. I think it's related to the kidneys.
Okay.
Go.
If I know someone, I care for him, and he has to give public lectures like that go all day long. He'll just be giving a conference and just be talking the whole day long. So what he does is he won't drink very much because he's basically on the platform. People catch him before he can even get to the restroom. And anyway, he'll get gout. He has, you know, and then he'll go for the junk food to compensate. So I'm just wondering if there's anything that could be that could help him with that.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up because I was just thinking about gout and then had forgotten it. Go ahead, Thomas.
Well, I was going to say the approach that he has right now is exactly opposite of what it should be. The bladder, like any other tissue in the body, can become dehydrated, and when it becomes dehydrated, it shrinks and therefore can't hold as much urine. If you'll have somebody do nothing but water for 3 weeks, it will rehydrate the bladder and actually be able to hold more. So I drink a gallon of water a day, and yet I urinate no more than anybody else because my bladder has expanded and rehydrated to its proper size. So the rule on water intake is you take your body weight and divide it in half, and that's the number of ounces of water a day you should drink. If you're 200 pounds, 100 ounces of water. 250 pounds, 125 ounces of water. Okay?
Okay.
Now, yeah, Susan, you want to cover gout?
Yeah. Drinking water does not make you urinate more, unless you're at a point where you're so starved for it. Actually, here's what happens. If you drink more than a half a cup at a time, you'll go to the bathroom right away to get rid of the rest. So if you sip it slowly all day long, it won't cause you to go and urinate more often. Like a half a cup every half an hour. That's how you do it.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Because that way you'll rehydrate slowly. Okay, now gout. Gout is a uric acid problem. We read about red meats being an issue there. And what it is undigested proteins will cause urea or uric acid, and for some reason it goes to the big toe. And I believe my daughter had this one time when we were traveling. She had a joint in her big toe that was really hurting her. Okay, so this is a kidney situation. And one of the preventions is safflower, but I'll tell you the biggest key is sugar intake. When you eat sugar, you're going to cause this kind of pain. We had a gentleman in our town that had heard that black cherries would help with gout pain. So he went out and bought, he started eating just cherry pie. He ate two or three cherry pies a day, and it didn't help at all because he had all that sugar.
You also can relate gout to digestive issues. You're not digesting your proteins properly. So supplementing with food enzymes really helps. The reason why the safflowers help so much is they actually increase hydrochloric acid in the stomach. They cleanse the hydrochloric acid pumps. And by increasing that acid, you're going to break down proteins better. Okay? And the black cherries do work great. But you have to eat them fresh, or you have to get a non-pasteurized concentrate. You mix it up. It's like 8 parts water to 1 part black cherry juice. And I find that I can knock out most acute cases of gout within about 24 hours of you 8 parts water, 1 part black cherry juice, drink a gallon of that, and within about 24 hours, the gout goes away.
And stay the heck
doing the same bad stuff. If you keep doing the same bad stuff to the body, of course, it's going to come back. So work on your digestion. So you're digesting your proteins properly. Get your black cherry juice in. Take your safflowers for preventative and stop eating the junk food. Be sure to get your water in. And gout really, gout is used to be considered a rich man's disease. It only happened to the aristocracy in Europe because of all of the rich, heavy foods that they were eating. The refined carbohydrates and, red
and
meat
red
with
meat.
Every meal and the sugar. Yeah. So, shop on the outside edges of the grocery store. Stay away from the center part where all the canned processed stuff is. And that should help clear him up. Susan, you want to finish that up?
I just wanted to say that anytime you have pain, real serious pain, like kidney stones, gout, arthritis, remember that sugar equals pain, and if you can get rid of the sugar, it will improve the condition.
Right.
Really.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else on that?
No.
I have
like a good history.
Yeah. Great.
Thanks for your question.
Okay. Thanks for being there. I love your program.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Good. Bye.
Anything we haven't touched base with here?
Let's see, kidney stones,
gout.
Let's briefly touch on kidney failure. They generally start putting people on dialysis when your kidney function gets below 15%. 15 to 20% is kind of the cutoff.
And I know what I need to say. The NSAID family of painkillers are the big culprit in this.
Yes.
Also, here's another piece of this. You've got 4 elimination channels in the body. The bowel is the first, obviously. That's 85% of what leaves the body. Then the kidneys are the next biggest remover of toxins. Then the lungs, and then the skin. And the skin's tied in with the kidneys. So if you have an eruption in the skin, you probably have a problem in the kidneys. Okay? And if your bowels are absolutely not working, you're going to the bathroom once every 3 or 4 days, don't you suppose that's going to put some more pressure on those kidneys to remove more toxins?
Absolutely.
So one of the ways you can take the pressure off the kidneys is to clear the bowels. make them work. Make them do their job. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, not to mention that, you know, if you're only going to the bathroom once every 3 or 4 days, you've got leaky gut syndrome, which means that all of the toxins from the gut are leaking out into the surrounding cavity called the peritoneal cavity, which is, you know, if you open a cadaver up, it's not, okay, here's the heart, here's the lungs, here's the liver. It's all jumbled together. And so the, you know, the intestines pressed up against the kidneys. And if you got stuff leaking out, it's going to damage the kidneys. And what I was going to say about kidney failure is there's one food out there that everybody knows about and everybody has had, and what you would consider the root or the very low part that you normally cut off of asparagus is the best thing for kidney failure. You juice raw asparagus.
Oh, I just had some last night.
Yeah, juicing raw. Don't cut off the tough parts at the bottom. That's the best part. But juicing the raw asparagus has gotten many people that were borderline fixing to go on dialysis, has brought many people's kidney function up by 60% and 70% in a month or less.
Wow.
So juicing asparagus, drinking cupfuls of juiced asparagus is excellent for the kidneys.
Okay, and if you're hooked on something like Aleve, ibuprofen, Motrin IV, or aspirin, or Tylenol, which are all damaging to the kidneys, what could we do instead? People want to know that. So we would go to MSM or white willow bark or Boswellia. And Nature Sunshine has a product called Triple Relief, which would be high-level pain. Switch your painkiller to something that's safe. That's the first thing you do.
Yeah, the new IF relief that we have is
right.
Absolutely amazing for pain. It's got the mangosteen pericarp, so it's anti-inflammatory with the antioxidant value of the mangosteen pericarp. It's got the Boswellia. It's an amazing formula. I'm using that exclusively for pain now.
Great. I'll have to try that one. We ought to mention that Thomas and I are teaching a class on Saturday in Birmingham. It's called Dr. Mom, Dr. Dad, and I'm sure we could find you some space in there if you wanted to come. It'll start at 9 o'clock in the morning. So if you want to call sometime tomorrow, why don't you email one of us, and we can make sure that you'd have space available.
Yes.
My email address is ngingrich, ngerich, at cinci.rr.com. Okay, Thomas, give them yours.
My email address is tmeasley@hotmail.com, tmeasley@hotmail.com, and we'd love to hear from you. Also, before we close the show down for the night, I do want to say that before you try any herbal regimen, consult with your medical doctor first. We are not medical doctors, and we do not advocate going off of any prescription medication. This is for educational use only.
Yes,
yes, that's our disclaimer.
Right. Right. And we are planning one of those classes in Fort Wayne on May the 5th, and there's another one in Wilmington, Ohio on the 12th of May. So y'all are welcome to come. And send your questions to us by email. Let us know what direction you'd like us to go with the show. And if anybody has any further questions, I think we've got about 3 more minutes. We could take any more questions from you that you might have. And we love the participation in the show. So if you don't mind, please email us and let us know, you know, what questions you've got. And since we got 3 minutes left and nobody's asking a question, Thomas, have you had anything weird happen this week?
No, not at all. But I'm going to go ahead and sign off for the night because my phone reception's fixing to get bad. So it was a pleasure doing the show with you, and I will talk to you soon.
Okay, great. Thanks, Thomas. Any other
Thank
questions
you.
Out there? Yeah, thanks. We'll see you tomorrow. Okay, just for the last couple of minutes, I'll give you a reminder that we are doing the Dr. Mom, Dr. Dad class, and we're available to teach those anywhere in the country. And there's another class that follows that I feel is really the meat of how to work with the systems of the body and to find exactly the right herbs for hot and cold situations. It was authored by Stephen Horn, who is the founder of Tree of Light. It's an educational organization, and Thomas and I teach with that organization. So if you could find a group of people and you'd like to have a full-day course, we follow that with four conference calls to get you through the certification, too, and get you started on getting certified in some herbal things. So with that, I guess I'm going to just get ready here and sign off unless somebody else has another question. Thank you very much for listening tonight, and have a good one. Hopefully we'll see you on Saturday. Okay, bye.